What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to What Women Must Know, a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters. I'm your host, Dr. Sheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I'm an author. I'm a lecturer. I have not only this wonderful radio show, but I also have another show every Sunday on this network at 4 p.m. called The Women's Healing Circle. And I am out there advocating on behalf of women and men to get empowered through accessing truthful information that will allow you to make the most informed decisions for your own life. And that's what this show is all about. And I'm so happy you're joining us today for another exploration and in-depth conversation into subjects that women must know. I want to just remind everyone that I have a website dedicated to empowering you with truthful information. It is called, guess what? No, that's not it. It's called whatwomenmustknow.com. And if you get onto that site, opt in, you'll have special reports sent to you. You'll have access to many, many of my free articles, teleseminars. I have an amazing teleseminar series coming up in a couple of weeks now called Turn Back the Clock and Rejuvenate Your Hormones, Health, and Your Life. And all you need to do is opt in and you'll get all that information so you can stay right there at the leading edge. And the leading edge is what the show is all about, and that's what our conversation today will be exploring. So in a sense, buckle your seatbelts because we're going to take you on quite a ride. And my guest today is Dr. Bruce Lipton, who I have to say, are you there, Bruce? Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, Bruce, let me just say that I want to introduce you properly in a minute, but I want to say that I was introduced to your work, I don't know, I was thinking maybe 10 years ago, and I have to say, as I'm sure many people have said to you and many more will say, you have been a profound inspiration in shifting our perceptions of reality to a new expanded place, and I just cannot thank you enough for the courage to be out there speaking as a heretic at first, but of course now you are a leading voice. So let me give you a proper introduction. I just had to say that.
Oh, make it brief so we can have a good conversation.
All right. You know, I'm thrilled to have you here with us. I know you're a very busy man, but let me just tell our audience that Dr. Bruce Lipton is an internationally recognized authority in bridging science and spirit and a leading voice in new biology. A cell biologist by training, he taught at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and later performed pioneering studies at Stanford University. He's the author of The Biology of Belief and a recipient of the 2009, I hope I say this right, Goy Peace Prize, and has become a much sought-after guest speaker for hundreds of radio shows and conferences around the world. And what a pleasure it is to have you here, Bruce. Thank you so much for taking the time.
I so appreciate the opportunity, Sheryl, because your work is very important to get knowledge out to people. You know that old saying, knowledge is power. And the most important corollary is lack of knowledge is a lack of power. And we've been sort of programmed with disempowering knowledge about who we are and losing our power along the way.
And that's what's so exciting about this moment in our own evolution, because we take people like yourself who've been able to articulate some very profound concepts that have been universal truths, and we have access to all of these universal truths, and then we have people like yourself who kind of translate it into a language so we can not only understand what this moment in our own evolution is about, but the huge potential that awaits all of us at this time, more so than probably any other time in the history of humanity.
Very exciting time to be here. I mean, it's so exciting because there's an upheaval that is so massive and it's brewing just under the surface, and people are so caught up with their little day-to-day fears that are propagated by the news media, and what we're not recognizing that within a very short time in front of us, there'll just be a whole shake-up of civilization, and we're all going to be involved with it. So it's important for us to get some information because this is a time of gaining personal empowerment, and it's really important because the evolution that's in front of us is a participatory evolution, meaning it's not an evolution where people just sit around in their living rooms in the easy chair and one day, oh my God, we have evolved, you know, and it's like this is an evolution that requires us as participants to be in the creative aspect of this new evolution, and it's really important for us to do that because science has recognized that we're in a state called a mass extinction, where we're losing species of life and destroying the environment so quickly that our own extinction is on the line right now. And it's interesting because, well, there have been 5 times in history mass extinctions wiped out life and started all over again. The previous 5 were due to things like asteroids or comets hitting the Earth, destroying the environment, wiping out life, etc. Except this one, the 6th one, which is science has now recognized the fact that we're in it, it's actually, they recognize it's due to human behavior. And it says that the way we've been treating each other, the way we've been treating the planet is self-destructive to the extent that we have really started to damage the fabric of life that provides for us. And if we don't change the way we're living on this planet, then we are facing an extinction in the very near future. I mean, when it's a scientific fact that the oceans will have no fish in them in 35 years, you have to stop and go, wow, that sounds like science fiction, planet Earth with no fish in the ocean. It's like, yeah, but that's a scientific reality. So it says we're in a state where we either do something or we kiss it goodbye, actually. So it's interesting. We're facing an evolution. It's an active participatory process. The resolution, will we make it or not, it's still an open question. There have been civilizations that have been on this planet that have disappeared completely, and there's, you know, no reason why we you know, might not follow the very same path. But we're also in a very neat opportunity to expand information distribution to the entire world through something like the Internet. And as I said, knowledge is power, and when people get knowledge of how they work and how the system works, that's knowledge of self, and that means self-empowerment. And this is what we're facing right now. It's an opportunity to create that self-empowerment, take over the creation, and continue that creation, and that's where the evolution comes from. And yet we're also finding forces that are opposed to this evolution, which are freaky to me. and yet, so we're in this state where people have to be involved now.
So here's what I'd like to do in the very precious time that we have. Kind of cover some of the key shifts, key concepts you brought forward, key paradigm benders, you might say,
yeah.
And so people can have an idea of the real possibilities that await us. And also, I want us to be sure to include in our time together some practical suggestions you have in helping people to move into that place of a greater power and possibilities within themselves.
Well, I hope we have 12 hours because I really want to talk about this. But basically, I guess where we should start then is that civilizations have come and gone before. Just in the West, 10,000 years ago, there were civilizations that were called animism, which are like the Native American Indians or the Druids in Europe that were Earth people, more or less, that lived in the spirit and material realm of the garden. And then we went into a period called polytheism, which is characterized by the Romans, Greeks, and the Egyptians, and they disappeared. And then we went into a period called monotheism, where the church ran civilization. And then that actually ended after Charles Darwin came up with a theory of evolution. And then the church gave way to science as the provider of our civilization's truth. And every time the basic truths of a civilization change, then that civilization automatically changes after that. In my book, I refer to these basic truths and reference them to what we call the perennial questions. These are questions that people have asked for 10,000 years, and the basic three questions are, why are we, or how did we get here, why are we here, and now that we're here, how do we make the best of it? When the answers are provided by some person or some organization, and the people accept the answers to the questions, that person or organization becomes the leader of that civilization and the truth provider, because if they provided those basic truths, then we go look for all the other truths from the same source. And when the answers to the questions change, we change the truth provider and we change the character of the civilization to conform to the new answer. So relevance to the immediacy is this. If I say, what civilization are we in right now? And it's referred to as scientific materialism. It's a belief that based on science's answers to the first three questions that the public adopted and then made a way of life. And so we're living a character of life based on the principles of this scientific materialism, which is partly Newtonian and partly Darwinian. And if I say, how did we answer the questions? I say, in the previous civilization, when the church ran it, the questions were answered, how did we get here? God's divine intervention. Why are we here? According to the church, we were living out plays of morality to see if we were worthy to go to the next destination, which was heaven. And then, how do you live here? And they offered that you live by the laws of the Bible. And then after Charles Darwin came, we changed the answers, and then civilization changed. No longer do we go to the church for our truth. Now we say, if it's true or not, we ask scientists. And it's funny because we went previously to the church and got truths from black-coated priests, and today we go for our truth to science with white-coated priests. And we get our answers from them, and they gave us the answers. How do we get here? Well, that was the Darwinian belief of random mutations. And they said, but why are we here? And then they say, well, if it was random mutations, there was no purpose to it. So we're just here, so, you know, make the best of what you got right now. And then they say, well, then how do you make the best of it? And the answer, unfortunately, which is based on Darwinian theory, is that we live in a world based on a struggle for survival with competition for fitness. And I say, yeah, but what does all this mean? I say, well, if you take these beliefs and make a culture, then you have the one that we live in right now, which is a culture that has no connection to the planet, because we found that there's no purpose for our being here, that we're destroying the environment which actually gave rise to us, that we live in a Newtonian world, which is a mechanical, physical world, and when you take that Newtonian world and mix it with a Darwinian belief of a struggle for survival, then you see why people are so preoccupied with getting material possessions in this world, because it references how are you competing in that quest for survival by how many possessions you have. So in the process of living out that Darwinian world, we're destroying the environment to create all these toys and things, and not recognizing that the environment is really what gave life to us. So that issue, and then the struggle for competition and survival is the one that leads to the violence and wars of our planet, saying there's not enough for all of us, and I'm going to take what I need and screw all the rest of you. And so we've lived in a very aggressive world that says that evolution is driven by this struggle for survival, and you must compete, and the competition is always win-lose. Like, if you're in a competition, you got to be the winner, because the other choice is you're the loser in a competition. And we built a whole world on competition, violence, all this stuff, based on these beliefs. The most important thing is all these beliefs have changed.
We've gotten as far as we can go operating with that belief system.
Yeah. And Cheryl, is even more important, which I guess it was glad you said that for this reason, is that, as I said, we're facing a mass extinction. And as I also said, that science has recognized that human behavior is responsible for this mass extinction. And then I also said that human behavior is predicated on the beliefs of these answers to the questions, okay? And then we have to say, wow, it's not working. I go, well, obviously it's not working. We're facing extinction. And then I use a wonderful quote from Einstein. It's the purity and simplicity and the profoundness of it. It's just that you cannot solve the problems with the same thinking that created the problems. And then I say, yeah, but the world that we're living in is created by what? Well, government, economy, academic institutions, medical institutions, religious institutions. These are the institutions that have been keeping the beliefs that we have been following and living by, and now finding that those beliefs are leading to self-destruction. So then you go to Einstein's quote, well, you can't solve the problem with these beliefs. And then you recognize, ah, that's why the whole thing is falling apart. The institutions are crashing. The economy is going crazy right now. Why? Because if we continue to live according to the principles that are taught by the current institutions, healthcare, and even the old belief about women's roles, you know, all this kind of stuff, these are the old beliefs that are destructive. And if these things don't fall, then the guarantee of extinction is that's a sure thing at that point. And so it's interesting because, well, the media is saying, oh, my God, be afraid, it's falling apart. I'm the guy that's out there going, yay, because we will not be able to create that better world built on the old beliefs, because those are the ones that are causing the problem. So I just want people to recognize the world's in upheaval, and it's a darn good thing, because if it isn't, then extinction is going to be accelerated much faster. So there's a whole change of beliefs, and it's interesting because the answers to the questions of how we got here change. And remember, the answers to the questions ultimately shape how we live in the world. So I say, well, what are the new answers? And the first question is, how do we get here? Well, the belief, Darwinian belief, it was just random genetic accidents. Now we know, no, that's not how it happened. It happened through what are called adaptive mutation mechanisms, meaning organisms learn to continuously adapt and cooperate with the environment, so that every organism that was introduced into nature, by definition, was introduced to bring harmony and balance to the environment. And then they go, oh, that's pretty interesting, because we have so destroyed the harmony and balance of the environment, that's why we're facing extinction. And yet the new biology says, you were brought here to tend the garden, as the Indians said. That's exactly what we were here to do. And then I said, well, why are we here? Well, that's, you know, taking care of the place. And then how do you make the best of it? Well, the old story is we were here in a struggle, which led to the competition for all the material money and toys and all that stuff, and you know, win-lose. And the new one says, no, how do you make the best of it? You understand that we live in total cooperation and community amongst ourselves and amongst the organisms that constitute the biosphere. So basically it says, it's not based on competition, it's based on cooperation. It's like, oh, we were going the wrong way. And all of these change our relationship to the planet. And they say, so what's the future? Well, the future is based not on Newtonian physics, which is the mechanical, physical universe. It's based on quantum physics, which is energy. Energy is information. Energy are emotions. Energy is feelings. This is our thoughts, our consciousness. It's driven by that. It's not driven by money and material things. And so it says, oh, then we must learn to be more conscious and learn to be more cooperative and work in harmony with each other. I said, oh, absolutely right. And of course, you know, what does that represent? Well, it represents the missing feminine traits that were part of the world at one time. And then we took over the masculine traits, which were power and force and all that stuff. And the cooperativity has been left out. And the evolution says, no, you must bring this cooperativity back. And we also bring in the polarities come together into the unity of the middle. So everything that we've seen as polarities actually has to recognize they're all part of one and the same and work together in harmony. And that when we look at like male and female, we've been in a very, unipolar situation for so long. And yet our evolution says that, for example, that the role of women and the way women communicate and think and are tend toward cooperation and community is an essential and vital, necessary aspect of our evolution, and has to come back in. And so when you put all that together with the cooperation and the look for new technology so that we can live in the garden without destroying the garden, brings a whole new potential and a new vision of a world that is just, following the current collapse. So my message for people, if I could give one right now, is, okay, there is a collapse. Don't get caught up in the collapse. That is the necessary birthing process to create something new and better. If you get caught up in the collapse, then you're left in all the pain and all the aggravation. But if you say, look, I know this is going on, but it's necessary for me to do the next thing. And I start creating the next thing and participating in the next thing. Then I'm, by nature, not involved with the collapse anymore. I'm already involved with the building of the new one. And yet the media wants to keep people in the fear mode, because when they keep you in fear, they control you. And so it's like the way out is to become independent, self-empowered, and start to work on the future and let go of the current situation.
And I think that's so critical. I'm actually taking a fast from all media right now, Bruce. I don't have a television. I don't
Great.
To the news. I find it just too fear-based, and stress being the ultimate energy that contracts us, ages us, you know, alters our gene. I just don't want to add any more into my life.
I have done that now for several years. I don't get a newspaper, and my TV's only hooked up to my DVD player, so I'm the guy who can select what I want. And the whole important part about this, as the biology belief book stresses, is that, as you said, when you get under this kind of life-threatening condition, which is a major stress, of course, stress debilitates the body in two major ways, and then also punctures our intelligence in the third way. And the first two things that people have to understand is that when you're in stress, you divert the energy of your body into the protection mechanisms, and by doing so, you shut off the processes of growth and maintenance, because you're getting the energy ready for fight or flight. So you compromise your growth and maintenance of your body when you're in stress, and you're getting ready like a track star, get ready to run at some point. And then number two, you shut off the immune system. Because when the threat is from the outside environment, then the maintenance of the inside environment takes a secondary role in that case. And the immune system takes a lot of energy. I mean, that's why when you get sick, for example, you get very tired, because the energy of the immune system, it takes a lot. So if you're running from a lion, the idea of supporting your immune system is like, well, not now. It's like, if I get away from the lion, then we'll take care of that stuff, you know. So basically it says, under the stress, by watching the TV and listening to the news and the media, which is encouraging all the stress, you're getting sicker day by day. And of course, you can just look at the statistics of the health in the United States. It's like we're the sickest nation in the world, and yet we pay the most money for health care of any nation in the world, which is also a good indication. It says that money does not buy health. And the whole idea about that is that, but they're knowingly doing this, creating this fear, because not so much of that part, which they also capitalize on, that part being the loss of our health, but they capitalize more on this fact that a third part of that fear is that when you're in a stressful situation, the stress hormones in the body shut down the conscious processing of the brain and redirect brain activity to the hind brain, which is reflex or reactive biology, so that when you're in a stressful situation, you're not using conscious reasoning. You're in a stressful situation, you're just making reactive responses. And basically what it simply boils down to is when you're stressed, you're less intelligent. And that's why, you know, especially in the former government under Bush, anytime they really wanted to push some kind of legislation through, that's when we had, oh, global threat thing, you know, and everybody started getting afraid again. And in the moment everybody got afraid, they pushed through all this kind of limiting, disempowering legislation because we were afraid. And the whole idea about it, they're continuing to do this, and the only way out of it is you must not be afraid, because the moment you're afraid, you actually are consenting to this over, you know, this taking over our powers, and they rely on that. So basically says there's a future coming, and we have to recognize that the changes are fearful for some, but if you live in the changes and focus on the changes, then of course you're going to feel all that. But if you're already moving out into creating a better community and a cooperative society and a better world, then you're engaged in that process, and that has a completely different environment, and you can live that world independent of the people that are going crazy.
So this, we can segue into something I really want my listeners to understand that I found to be truly transforming in my life, and that is the one of the key concepts in the biology of belief, of the fact that we can alter our gene expression. And when you're in a stressful, fearful place, you're altering gene expression in a certain way. And when you are in a positive, loving, uplifting reality, then your genes are getting expressed in that way. And can you just elaborate a bit? Because this is so liberating, this thought right here.
Well, it was research that I did in 1967, and it blew my mind then, and it took me a bunch of years to coordinate it because it was so antagonistic to the conventional curriculum that I was teaching medical students that it was hard to try to introduce this into my community because it was like I was a total heretic. And basically, it was a simple understanding. This is how simple it is. I was growing stem cells, and this was 1967, so 43 years ago. And I'd take one stem cell, put it in a petri dish by itself, and it would divide every 10 hours. So in about 2 weeks, I have thousands of cells in the petri dish, but they're all genetically identical. Then what I did is split up the cells in the petri dish into three separate petri dishes and change the environment, which is the growth medium, the composition of it, in each of the three dishes. And in one dish, the cells form muscle, and another dish, they form bone, and a third dish, they form fat cells. And then the big, profound question is, well, what controls the fate of the cells? And the answer is, well, it's not the genes. They were all genetically identical. Mm-hmm. The only thing that was different was the environment. So I started to recognize that the cells, the health of a cell, was a complement to the environment. If I took a petri dish with cells and put it from a good environment to a bad environment, the cells will get sick, begin to die, the cultures will crash, and then you would say, you know, if you were medically oriented, you'd say, well, what drugs should I give these cells? And then I'd go, you don't give them any drugs at all. You just take the dish from the bad environment, return it back to the good environment, and instantaneously the cells will become healthy again. And basically, I thought, wow, this is just straightforward research. I repeated it a lot, over and over again. And then at some point, it's like, well, what does this relate to me as a person? And then here's the joke and fun part, is that a person, when we look in the mirror, we see ourselves as single individual human entities. And I go, well, that's an illusion, because in truth, you are comprised of about 50 trillion cells. It's the cells are the living entity. The human, by definition, is a community of cells. And the interesting thing then is that a human body is a skin-covered petri dish. And what it means is if you take your 50 trillion cells and put it in a bad environment, the cells get sick, and if you move it back to a good environment, the cells get well, and you have to use no medication to do this understanding process. And then you say, well, how does it work? And then here goes the simple part. I go, the body's blood is the culture fluid, like I changed in the petri dishes. And when I changed the chemical composition of the culture fluid, I changed the fate of the cells. I go, okay, so I have a skin-covered petri dish with 50 trillion cells, and the blood is a culture medium. And I say, well, yeah, but what controls the chemistry of the blood? I go, the brain. I say, yeah, but what chemicals should the brain release? I go, whatever your mind perceives. When you open your eyes and you see something that is love for you, you release into the blood elements like serotonin, oxytocin, dopamine. These are chemicals that give health and energy and maintenance to the body. That's why when you're in love, you can feel healthy and so alive, because that chemistry is exciting and making your cells grow and doing everything wonderful. And I say, well, wait. What if I open my eyes and I see something scary? And I go, oh no, now you release the stress hormones. And when you put the stress hormones in the body, it changes all the functions of the cells, including the genetic activity. And now you can feel the stress. And the stress shuts down the growth and maintenance of the body as it conserves the energy for protection. So the point about this is, as you perceive the world, the way you perceive it releases chemistry into the blood, which controls the behavior and the genetics of the cell. So where the profound point comes from that you mentioned very briefly is that, well, we talk about cancer as a genetically controlled thing. It turns out less than 10% of cancer has a hereditary linkage. 90% of cancer is due to an individual's lifestyle and their perceptions. And why is that relevant? Because every one of these cancers is created by their beliefs, and every one of these cancers can be cured by changing those beliefs.
And, well, I mean that's such a powerful statement right there. Do you think, is it 100% the result of the environment, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, that we carry then?
It's not 100. I said there was a linkage to some genetics, but there's very little bit that's directly linked.
Right.
Most people with cancer do not have cancer genes, so-called. Most people with cancer have normal genes that are being modified by the perception, and that was what you mentioned, but I didn't go into, about that perception. When that chemistry goes in from the mind into the blood and then affects the cells, it also affects the readout of the genes. And we used to think, well, the genes control our traits. Well, I say, well, the genes represent traits, but the mind can modify the readout of the genes. So that for every gene, which is like a blueprint to make a protein building block of the body, for every gene in your body, you can modify the readout to create 30,000 different proteins from the same blueprint just by the way you perceive the world. And that means you can modify the readout of a healthy gene and make it a cancer gene. Or you can modify the readout of a mutant gene and actually make it a healthy gene. But it's based on your perceptions. And this becomes very critical because it's the way you live your life. And therefore, if you change the way you live your life, then that's when you change the expression of the cancer. Spontaneous remissions occur when people have such a profound change of belief in that terminal disease state that they've been programmed to believe they were in. And all of a sudden they change their belief so profoundly the disease disappears. That's the same as taking the petri dish of cells from the bad environment and putting it back into the good environment. The bad environment doesn't have to be an outside environment. It just has to be a bad mental interpretation of life that creates an interior bad environment that will manifest that illness, and change that perception, and you change that environment. And people heal themselves, like, even if they're sick and they have to go to work because of some whatever reason, it's like you can't not go. They, sick as they are, they get up and go to work, and usually during while they're working, they're pretty healthy. And then as soon as they're off the job, it's like, oh, they got sick again. And it's basically because the mind controls all that.
Well, you know, I'm just going to let people take a moment to digest all this, because we're going to take a break, Bruce. We'll be right back. And I want everyone to hang in there. You're listening to What Women Must Know with my very special guest today, Dr. Bruce Lipton. And don't go away. We'll be back.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
This is Mitchell J. Raven to tell you that we have two new time slots every Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Progressive Radio Network. Join me as I interview and dialogue with the sung and unsung heroes of society with passion and with commitment. Scientists, healers, filmmakers, musicians, environmentalists, and gurus on Mondays, and a call-in show where you'll be the focus on Wednesdays. Again, Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m., join Mitchell Raven as together we create a better world.
Is a state of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
Join us, Bruce and Marianne Curtis, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Truth and Freedom. We present provocative conversations with the world's most brilliant minds in the areas of holistic health, spiritual wisdom, politics, and a host of other topics. Some of our topics include the latest work in non-invasive therapy on the brain, the truth beneath the global economic meltdown, healing power of the breath, and the sublime truth beyond all religious traditions. In this age of transformation, we need to look beneath the surface appearance of things to see the underlying reality. For material that is always illuminating and often liberating, tune in to Truth and Freedom on the Progressive Radio Network Fridays at 3 p.m.
Hello! Check out my Show, the Animal Magnet Pet Radio, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio Network. Or catch it anytime you like by scrolling through the archives. You'll hear me, Deborah Wolf, best-selling author and award-winning radio host, chatting with the best pet experts and animal A-listers in the world about controversial topics like breed bans, the indoor versus outdoor cat debate, and whatever else is hot in the news and on their minds that matters to animals and the people who love them. Plus, we tell pet jokes, we'll give you trivia and smart, quirky facts, recipes, and take-home tricks and tests, homework your pets will love. Email your pet problems to me, and we'll solve them on air. So listen to The Animal Magnet on Progressive Radio Network and get your animal fix.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Welcome back to What Women Must Know. And we're having a truly mind-expanding, consciousness-expanding conversation with my guest today, Dr. Bruce Lipton, author of his latest book called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, and A Way to Get There from Here. So, Bruce, thanks for hanging in there with me. My mind's been going. A couple of things I want to ask you.
Yes.
There's an emerging area of testing called personal genomics that
yes.
people can actually look at the switches that get turned on and off and how efficient and inefficient. Well, what are your thoughts about using that approach to help people understand their specific expressions?
Basically, I support the latest science on that says it's a waste of time and money.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Why?
Because the
Why
reality
is, that?
Is your genes are modified by the way you respond to the environment, and you change the response of your genes on a day-by-day basis. So giving an example is you get identical twins the moment they're born and check their genetics, and you find that both siblings are expressing pretty much the same genes in each of their own bodies. And then I say, okay, now look at the genetic readout of the same twins over time, which they did, like a year, 5 years, 10, or 20 years down the road, then compared the genetic readout of the twins, and they found that they varied widely and greatly, and they recognized that as you experience and live your life, you change the readout of your genes. So the original vision was the genes control your traits, but that was called genetic control. And as the new science that I describe in Biology of Belief is called epigenetic control, very profound difference, because that little prefix epi literally means above.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say genetic control, that says control by genes. If I say epigenetic control, that literally says control above the genes. And the new science recognizes, as I mentioned earlier, that you can modify the readout of your genes and create 30,000 different variations of proteins from the very same blueprint based on how you experience life. Then all of a sudden I say, so I'm give you a genetic readout. I go, that's really nice. Well, that's today. What about tomorrow? You know, how are you going to change your life tomorrow? How are you going to change your belief and how are you going to change your response? For example, Dean Ornish, wonderful cardiovascular physician in San Francisco, did work on cardiovascular disease. What he showed in his first book, essentially, was he took a group of patients and didn't give them the conventional pharmaceutical drug treatment for cardiovascular disease. He gave them lifestyle changes, how to have a better diet, how to deal with stress, how to meditate, things like this, and found that compared to the group that got the conventional pharmaceutical treatment, this group, the pharmaceutical people, they were very happy when the person's degeneration of their cardiovascular system stopped. And it turned out, in the group that didn't get the medication, not only did the degeneration stop, these people actually regenerated the cardiac tissue without the drug. So that was an amazing thing. But the more important one he's just completed recently was a study with prostate cancer patients. And he tried the same thing. He said, what if I just, instead of giving them conventional treatment, we just change their lifestyle program? Well, he did that for 90 days. And he checked their genetic readout the day before they started the program, and then checked their readout the day after they ended, 90 days later. And he found there were 500 genes that changed reading, and just by changing lifestyle.
Right.
And that many of the genes were those that were actually contributing to the cancer.
On the epigenetic level, by altering our diet, our thoughts, our, you know, stress levels, we literally can control or can alter, can create variations of gene expression.
Not can, do.
We do.
Yeah, can
we
is like
do.
That
every
might
thought
happen. No,
matters.
Say it does happen this way. And why is that relevant? Because reading the gene blueprint does not necessarily tell you the fate, because the fate is based on what your lifestyle is about. That's, for example, let's talk about a breast cancer gene, BRCA1 or 2. I say, well, what percentage of women get the cancer? And they say, well, like 60% or so. And I say, okay, what about the 40% that have the gene and they don't get the cancer? Tell me the story about that.
Yeah.
They go, well, they just don't want to talk about it. And the fact is, no, wait a minute, what you're trying to tell me is having the gene alone does not provoke the cancer. And the answer is absolutely not. Having the gene alone does not do that. Having the gene with a lifestyle that supports cancer, now that's a different game, okay? And so basically it says that the presence of the gene itself did not tell you about the cancer. It's the presence of the behavior and the lifestyle that influences the cancer.
And that is the point of power for people, because that is what we can alter and intervene with.
That is the profound, and I emphasize that with capital letters in there, profound difference between the old genetic control and the new epigenetic control. The old genetic control makes you a victim. It says genes control your life. You didn't pick the genes. You can't change the genes, and therefore your life is predetermined by the genes, and therefore there's nothing you can do. The new science, epigenetics, completely turns that story upside down and says you were given these genes and you were given the ability to rewrite them. And therefore, it's the way you respond to life that will create the genetics that you're going to express. And all of a sudden it says, well, the first one says you're a victim. You got the genes, they control you. The second one says, no, you have the genes and you control them. And all of a sudden it says, oh, that's mastery. So we're leaving behind a vision of you're a biological victim to a reality that you are a master of your genetics. But you have to know how it works. And if you don't know how it works, then you retain the concept of victim at that point.
Right. Now, the thing I want us to move to from that thought is, we're at a place, as you said, and you started the conversation of chaos going on. Old systems are breaking down. Our perceptions of reality are not really serving us. They're actually not even valid in most cases. And people are feeling this crunch within their personal lives and the collective, which often is the vehicle that allows us to have a shift of perception when we're up against the crunch.
Yeah, it's actually, there's a name for it. All biological organisms, it's something that biologists recognize exists universally but have no real understanding of where does that come from. It's called the biological imperative. And basically what it means is this. Any organism, from a bacterium up to a human, when you threaten its life, will do every maneuver possible to stay alive. In other words, an organism won't just say, oh, okay, kill me. It's built in a drive to stay alive. Well, this biological imperative, of course, responds to the environmental information. If there are threats in the environment, it engages the biological imperative because you said, your life is being threatened, pay attention. And that's what people are feeling now. The biological imperative is saying, something's up, I don't know what it is, but something big is going to happen here, and I'm feeling a little uneasy about this because, without knowing it, you're feeling uneasy because the biological imperative is telling you that a life-threatening situation is coming up, meaning a life-changing situation. Those that are prepared for it, it's not life-threatening at all. Those that are not prepared for it, it could scare them to death, in a sense. So basically, your biological imperative is a little alarm clock. It's waking up, and it's telling you change is imminent. And when this change, it says get ready. That's all it's saying is get ready. So everybody's getting ready, but they're not really exactly sure what they're getting ready for. And that's the problem, because if you buy the conventional fear story, it's like, get ready for the end. I'm really saying, no, get ready for the beginning. It's really a different story.
Okay, so what are some practical things, Bruce, that people can do that will support them in beginning to shift their energies, their perception, their frequencies, so they can align with this new impulse?
Absolutely important fact, number one, is that your life is not controlled by your conscious mind, which is the mind that is the creative mind and holds your spiritual identity. That's the mind, Cheryl, if I say, what do you want from your life? and that means you don't have it yet, and therefore you're creating it. By definition, that your desires, your wishes, your aspirations, your positive thinking all come from the conscious mind. And so that's the one that says, I want a great relationship, I want to be healthy, I want a good job, whatever that is. And I say, that's really great, that's a conscious mind. And then I say, unfortunately, neuroscience tells us that we only use that mind about 5% of the time in creating our lives. That 95% of our lives unfold from the programs in the subconscious mind. And the difference between the two is the conscious mind's creations are yours, and the subconscious mind's programs, primarily the fundamental ones, come from other people, our parents and our community during our development, during the first 6 years of our lives. So it says 5% of the time you're moving toward the things you really want to go to, and 95% of the times you're moving to wherever the programs in your subconscious allow you to go. And they say, yeah, but what are the programs in my subconscious? I mean, half of them were in there before you were born. Actually, they were during fetal development you got a lot of this programming. The question is, well, how do you know what's in there? And then this is the fun part, is you don't have to go backwards in your life to find out what's in your subconscious, because your subconscious is creating 95% of your life. So it basically says your life is a printout of your subconscious programs. And then you say, well, then what are my programs? I go, whatever works for you in your life, you have programs to support you getting that. Whatever you struggle with in your life, it says you have subconscious programs that are interfering with getting those things. And so basically it says, if you don't change the subconscious programming, then your life is going to just be a continuous printout of those bad programs. So the most important thing to recognize is you want to take control of your life. You find out what are the areas you struggle with. And then you recognize that primarily what this represents is programming in the subconscious that has disempowered you from obtaining those goals. That to obtain those goals, then it's, you know, comes down to the basic level saying, well, then at some point you must reprogram that subconscious mind, otherwise your life will just be continuously a printout of that. So the first level of empowerment is knowing, number one, your life is not controlled by your creative wishes and desires, and it's not controlled by invisible forces other than the invisible programs of your subconscious mind. And I emphasize this latter point very importantly. The subconscious, by its nature, says below consciousness. Given my lectures, I tell a story, and I say, look, you have a friend, you know your friend's behavior very, very well, and you happen to know your friend's parent. And at some point, you recognize that your friend has some of the same behavior of their parents. So you casually suggest, you go, hey, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you back away from Bill, because he's the first guy to vent, like, how can you compare me to my dad? And everyone laughs, because they're very familiar with it. And I go, two profound points, two of them. Number one, recognize that everyone can see Bill's behavior as like his dad except for Bill. Point. Your subconscious behavior is below your own recognition, so when you're doing it, you don't even see you're doing it. And point number two, profound point number two, we are all Bill. Every one of us is operating from invisible beliefs. And then I said, well, why is that relevant? Because the average person thinking, I'm driving my life, I'm really trying to go after these goals, and I keep making an effort, and I'm struggling, so the universe is against me, fate's not in my corner, blah, blah, blah. And I go, there's a problem. The invisible forces that are against you are not outside of you. They're actually your own subconscious programming, which again reflects other people's beliefs that were programmed into your life. And until you understand that, until you manage it, then you will walk on this planet as a victim. And it turns out, but you could change your beliefs. And as soon as you do that, then you start to become a master. And so point number one is, before we keep blaming the outside and forces unseen and invisible outside controlling us, it turns out we are the sole controller. And that if we are having struggles, the first place is to look inside.
You know, it's so having this conversation so fascinating to me, because I was a mind-body psychotherapist for 20 years before my other life came on as a naturopath, and I'm so grateful for, first of all the time, money, and energy I spent on discovering those places within me and freeing me, because I can live at a place of much greater health, vitality, and passion in my life. And
I appreciate that, because that's the example that I've been trying to get people to understand, is that once you do that, you become your master, and,
yes,
and your expression of that. So I appreciate that, Cheryl.
It's a freedom. It's a freedom, because we're freer to live in accordance with our own harmony.
Yes.
Other than the stress of those unlimited misperceptions. And it's a critical piece, and everyone has to do it. And here's the thing that I find exciting, because I know you really promote and support this. There are technologies now that are easy. You can make those shifts and changes and redirect those energies quickly, easily, without having to spend years and years and years in useless, really pretty much ineffectual psychoanalysis.
Absolutely. It was very ineffectual for a simple reason, and people should know this for their own understanding. And as I said, there's two minds, the conscious creative mind and the subconscious, which is the programmable mind, the habit mind. And what's very profound that people have to know is, yes, there's an entity in the conscious mind, that's you, your spirit, your identity, your source, whatever. And then people say, well, I'm going to give myself a good talking to, as if they're going to talk to their subconscious mind, try to change the program. And then I, bring up the interesting question is, like, when you're talking to yourself, who are you talking to? And you say, well, I'm talking to the subconscious. And I go, gee, well, there's a problem, because the subconscious mind is like a tape player. It records programs, and you push the button and it plays the program. And I go, take a tape player, have a tape in there, push the button, it's playing a program. And then I say, go up now and talk to the tape player and tell the tape player you don't like the program and you want something different. And I say, how much talking to the tape player is going to change, when will it change? And the answer, it doesn't.
Right.
And that's the most frustrating thing for people, because they think, I'm going to, give myself this good talking to. And it's so frustrating because it doesn't work. But the reason it doesn't work is there's nobody in the tape player to talk to. And it's also very important to recognize this. The conscious mind and subconscious mind learn in two different ways. The conscious mind is creative, can learn from listening to a teleseminar, a radio show, a seminar, you go to see somebody, read the self-help book. All of these can change the conscious mind. Go to the psychoanalysis and cry your eyes out for years and get the whole story, and your conscious mind's going to go, wow, now I know why my life doesn't work. And then I go, now that you know, does your life work any better? And the answer is absolutely not. And the reason is this, because since 95% is coming from the subconscious, and that kind of learning, reading, going to lecture, all that kind of stuff, doesn't translate from the conscious mind into the subconscious mind. And it says, you become consciously aware of the issues, and yet you're still being driven by the unconscious mind, which never changed the program, because that's not how it does it.
Right.
Yeah. But as you found out, you can change the program.
Yes.
If you learn how to push the record button. And some of the new techniques that you mentioned, which collectively I call them energy psychology, is a group of modalities. They're all somewhat similar, but they're really involved with exercises in super learning. And super learning is the ability to get a brain balance, a right and left hemisphere, get them in harmony, which offers an opportunity to rewrite these programs virtually instantaneously. And this is so necessary, because we don't have a lot of time to waste on creating this change. And these new change modalities, as you mentioned, can make life changes, profound life changes, in 10, 20 minutes of an exercise. So.
Yeah. Yes, that's
great.
The good news is we don't have to go through a lot of pain and suffering. What about the role of meditation? How important do you believe that is to help shift our perceptions?
It's very critical to a certain degree, because we live in such a busy world that our hemispheres are always working on problems and stuff like that. And as I said, the brain is usually one side is more dominant, the other right or left. Sometimes we're more emotional, then sometimes we're more logical, but the two hemispheres work in harmony together. And so basically, if you get into a meditative state and you can lower your brain frequency activity, which is measured by EEG, there's a frequency called alpha, which is calm consciousness. Our daylight working mind is usually in beta, which is a higher vibrational frequency and focus driven and all that. When you get into alpha, you calm the brain down, and frequently that's when the two hemispheres get in harmony with each other. When you're in harmony with the right and left hemisphere, you're in a childlike wonderment. And it's the feeling of a child that had no, that child feeling, if you, depending on our backgrounds, but there must have been sometimes possibly as a child where it was like the wonder of being, wow, life is just beautiful and great, because we didn't have all the fears and all the programs and the responsibilities and that feeling that was going through the body. Well, the feeling is a change in the chemistry. And so what you're doing when you get into this nice meditative state is you're bringing the brain into balance and harmony, changing the chemistry of the body, and getting into a relaxed state. And you become more intelligent in that relaxed state, too. And it's a time for recharging the system and bringing the brain into a necessary rest period every now and then, because it's a continuous beta activity that is very stressful. And so, like children, you know, they go out there and they'll be active, and then it's like, oh, time for a nap, man, wherever it is, time for a nap. And then they get up and they're ready to go again. And in our adult life, it's not that we don't need that nap. We still need it, but we're driven. And the brain is always now on a stress level without getting the recharge of that meditation that would provide that, is problematic. So basically, yes, meditation is a wonderful harmonizing consequence on the physical body of getting the brain to be in harmony and then allowing that harmony to extend through the cells of the body.
Well, you know, we're almost at the end of the show, so number one, can you tell people the best website to learn more about your work and to learn about your
book? A simple one, Cheryl, is just brucelipton.com.
Okay.
Lots of articles of things that we've mentioned are downloadable from that website, and a lot of other information as well. So, and resources, for example, there's a resource page listing some of the energy psychology modalities and how to get in touch with them and stuff like that.
Okay, great. And any upcoming events or speaking engagements?
Oh, well, I know the next few are booked. They're all on the website, and it's wonderful if people can come, because the lectures are totally illustrated and dynamic, and they're at a level of understandability, which is really important, because if you take the science and use all the science words, it means nothing to people at some point. And yet, the science has all the practical importance of day-to-day life, and I try to bring that down to that level so people can understand how your thoughts are creating. And if you get power over that, then you, by definition, have power over the life that you are creating, which I experience now and see a lot of people doing, because this is part of the evolution, is to get your power back.
This must be an amazing time in your life, Bruce. You've gone from being the heretic to become the prophet.
not really. It's fun to, you know, in the beginning, as you're right, when I started saying this, the scientists would look at me and be like, you are crazy, you know. And now today, if a scientist listened to some of my lectures, they go, so what are you saying that's new? we've come a long way.
Well, I want you to know that you're very... You know, you're blessed to be able to be a vehicle to share this information, and we all are blessed to have access to your wisdom and your inspirational and mind-expanding thoughts. And I just personally want to thank you for how you've influenced me, and I know, you know, there are millions of people who now have had the opportunity to expand their perception because of your courage to speak your truth.
Well, I appreciate that. I just have to tell you, but the simple driving factor was, this was not my life. I lived the conventional thing. I took the science, applied it as a practice, and it profoundly changed my life, to the extent that I thought, oh my goodness, my life is so good that in gratitude for the universe, if people want to hear this, I'll go out and talk about it. And it's such an interesting time, because this is what people really need to hear. And I've been fortunately busy enough to go talk anywhere people will listen, and just say, look, you know, it's like, it's a wonderful opportunity. How bad is it to go out and give an audience a story that they're very powerful?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, that's great, empowering people. I love that job.
Yeah, it's a great job, and you do it so well. And I just wish you all the best, and thanks again for spending this time with us.
Cheryl, thank you, and I really want to thank your audience, because these are the people that are going to think different, and in that different thinking are going to allow us to evolve from the terrible state we're in to the beautiful opportunities that lie in the future.
And the true power that all of us have access to.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank all of you for listening again. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You have been sharing What Women Must Know with my very special guest today, Dr. Bruce Lipton, author of Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, and A Way to Get There From Here. Get a copy. It will change your life. And bye for now. And remember one more thing. Always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. See you next time. Bye.